You're listening to Resonance FM. My name's Jack Thurston. This is The Bike Show. On today's show, we're going to be taking a trip into the world of the bicycle and the mind. We're going to be looking at memories of bikes and investigating the way the bike can change how your brain works. Think back to your very first bike. Everyone had one. Mine was rust red with tiny white walled tyres. The moment the stabilisers came off was a moment of incredible emancipation and liberation. I felt like I'd grown 5 years older in a day. Of course, I'd grown out of a bike by the time I was 7 or 8 because it was so small. Anyway, I've been going around asking people to remember their first bike.
My first bicycle was orange. It was very tiny. I think it had a white saddle. It was called Spider, because at that time there was a band very popular, and it's called Spider Murphy Gang, so that's why I called my bike a Spider. And I loved my bike. I was cycling all the time on it. Yeah, it was just great having that bike, and I really liked it. And I was very sad when I had to give it away to get a bigger bike, because obviously at one point the bike was too small. It was really a tiny children's bike.
Well, my first bicycle was a BSA. It was blue, and it had white mudguards with a little reflector built into the back. I pedalled away merrily with my stabilisers, and there came the point where the stabilisers had to be removed, and I was fine. My father, who was pushing me, sort of forgot to say that he'd let go, and off I pedalled, and that was it. You know, I was bicycling away. My world is lost without you, for you are my first love, and first love never ever dies.
My first bicycle was called Le Bike, and it was blue and yellow. It was kind of very 80s. I think it was meant to look friendly to children, and I had a friend who could bicycle without stabilisers, and I thought I was terribly babyish for not being able to, and I took them off and thought that the way to balance was by holding the brakes, which of course didn't work, and I was just really disappointed. And suddenly I'd had this, you know, my freedom had been taken away because I couldn't get anywhere on my bike.
Mine was green, metallic green, with white tyres. And I had stabilisers, of course. But my problem was vanity, so I had to remove them, falling down quite a lot of times. And then I put some lovely strings, like coloured tape, on the wheels to make a noise, so it was like an engine. And I felt very tough. But of course, it didn't work for the other children. They thought it was ridiculous, so...
I had a little white chopper with solid wheels with no air in. So it was really juddery, and you go along the road. And we had a big hill outside our house, and it was great for whizzing down. And I remember whizzing down it one day. There was an old lady at the bottom, and I completely ran her over. And her husband chased me up the road. For you are my first love, and first love never ever dies. First love never ever
dies. Anyone who rides a bike will know of those moments when you're cycling along and suddenly you're struck by some kind of insight or revelation. The penny drops, you are able to solve that problem that you couldn't solve before. Or something occurs to you, some connection is made in your mind. Well, according to psychologist Rosie Wolford, this is a very common occurrence, and it's no coincidence at all. Because when you ride a bike, your brain state changes and you become more creative and more imaginative. I met up with her on a sunny spring day to go for a bike ride and find out some more.
It's a known fact that when you are doing an exercise that is repetitive and you keep doing it, as we do with cycling, your brain slips into something called alpha state, and in alpha state, a little bit of your brain that connects the unconscious with the conscious opens up. So if you've asked yourself a question or you're stuck on something, that's when answers tend to bubble out. Or if you've filled your brain with lots of ideas and thoughts, then when you're out walking or cycling, they tend to recombine, and things that are very true or very new tend to pop up. So cycling or walking or swimming are brilliant things to do to get yourself in a mental state for new perspectives and new ideas.
So where are we going to go for a bike ride this afternoon?
We're going to go through the Angel, which is hideously trafficy, badly designed for buses, not bikes, and then down St John Street and one of my favourite naughty bicycle actions, right through the middle of Smithfield's Market.
Okay, well, I'll follow you. Well, we are legally entitled to ride two abreast, apparently. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. I normally get rudely hooted at when we do that, though.
Well, you have to stand your ground.
We'll pedal it. Why do people push their babies out into the street ahead of you? Never understood that.
Well, I think this is the first time this year that I've actually felt some heat coming off the sun.
I know, it's great, isn't it? Absolutely joyful. I'm even squinting a bit and thinking about my sunglasses.
No, it's a really comforting feeling. It's like getting out from a kind of cold, dark room to a nice, warm one.
Yes, I normally get in an aeroplane and go to New Zealand for this effect. I love the way the colours have come out suddenly. I've been getting so depressed at all the green and grey and brown sort of mudge colours that was England for the last 3 months. And suddenly we have brightness. I think there's something to do with the way in which when you're cycling, you're seeing more things more rapidly in a more visceral way, more colours and shapes and different objects and people and sounds. And it's all a bit more intense than being in a car or walking or being standing still. And it jumbles things up in the brain a bit. You are moving through a really moving tableau, and it matters to have all your senses switched on. You know, and taking it all in. And every sound behind you and movement in front of you is part of what you need to know. So you are really you know, psychologically you're very alert to outside signals.
To be safe, partly.
To be safe, and also to have fun.
Yeah, to be safe and to know where you're going and to enjoy the speed.
Now, you might not like this, but we're going to have to get over to the right for traffic.
Okay. Or should we pedestrianise ourselves? Well, we've arrived at the north side of Smithfield Market. It looks like it's had a lick of paint.
It has had a major lick of paint in three attractive shades.
Green, sort of a mauve and a green and a blue.
Actually, not that attractive, rather garish.
Yeah. This has got to be one of the most special buildings in London, I think. Oh, look at that one over there.
It's the Flatiron gone tiny.
London's Flatiron building. And what I like about that is the windows upstairs have got curved glass.
We all know you can do that at the back of your Lexus, but I didn't know that people had that in their house. Do you know there's a beautiful, beautiful hidden square up there?
Is there?
Yes.
Should we go and have a look?
I discovered it the other day on one of my ambles.
All right, let's go and have a look. Little detour to the hidden square. Oh, we've got a bit of cobblestone, or pavé, as they call it in north of France.
This is a special pleasure for lady cyclists.
Where they at the Paris-Roubaix, which we're going to be covering in April on the show, has a long section of pavé across the fields of Flanders.
Really?
Very treacherous on road bikes, riding this stuff. Yeah.
Why is it treacherous? I think it feels quite nice.
Well, if you're going at 30 miles an hour.
On a cobble.
And you're Lance Armstrong.
Oh, okay.
A huge peloton of people over cobbles. It's pretty hazardous.
Not. Isn't this
especially small, in the rain.
This little square. I mean, who'd
yeah, what is this here? Square then?
I'm not sure.
I feel like I'm riding on a donkey rather than a bicycle.
I have one of these.
You've got slightly fatter tyres. Oh, and you've got suspension. You have suspension front and rear.
Front and arse, yes, that's very nice. Actually, it's meant to totally diminish your power. I think half of my pedalling power goes into these.
Into the comfort of your seat.
Maybe that's right and proper now I think about it.
Outside Ferrari's snack bar on the south side of Smithfield Market, an excellent place for getting a lamb chop at 3 in the morning.
The kidneys attached.
So how did you get into the connection between physical exercise, the wilderness and creative thinking?
Good question. I'm very, very trained up in creative thinking, but I was doing it in an office-y kind of setting. I was doing it for business strategy.
And so who are you working for?
I was working for a large advertising agency called Leo Burnett. And before I left, I was asked to coach my whole department in that way of thinking, creative problem solving. And I asked each person whether they'd like to practice on things in their life or things, client questions. And of course, they all chose their life. And I found that it worked really, really well for people trying to make, you know, step back and make big shifts in their life or really get some balance going or change fundamental things in life. So I didn't really think about that much more because I was off to study photojournalism and do my travelling things. And about 6 months later, I was in a huge, great gorge in New Zealand. And I suddenly had a whole lot of thoughts sort of came rolling into my head. And one of them was that it was incredibly healthy for everybody now and again to take time out and step back and have a look at, you know, the big picture of what was going on and choose their direction. In other words, not to just sort of blunder along the path you're on, but actually choose what you're doing with your life. And that way of thinking was not for people who were sad or stuck or whatever. It was the healthy, proactive thing to do, at which point I suddenly felt interested in it. And it was immediately obvious to me that being out in a great big landscape and being away travelling helps. I mean, that's just obvious. And because I'm a psychologist, very quickly the whole brain state stuff began to add in, and I realised there was some science to it too. And that it all added up to a really joyful life for me because I could do what I do, which is help people think forward creatively and productively in really beautiful environments and give people a nice time.
So when people come on a trip out to, yeah. It's the mountains in Spain, yeah?
The Picos Mountains, yeah.
You don't just send them off with a sandwich off into the mountains and go, okay, go and sort out your life.
No, what not at all. It's really structured and really supported. There are two coaches, and each morning for a week we have about 3 hours where we coaches ask you lots of questions, let you do lots of sort of mind mapping and visualizing and exercises, answering questions like what are your values, you know, what are the things you always wished for, how is the balance of your life working across all different elements. What do you see happening in the wider world, in community, to the environment, and how would you affect that if you could? What would you champion if you could? And so after about 3 days of those exercises, people know what the big question is for them, the thing that, well, we call it a stretchy ambition, but something they really want to do, but feels like a big stretch for them to shift to. And then the next 3 days are all about creativity and how do you get there, and practical planning once you've got some ideas. Anyway, those sessions are about 3 hours in the morning, one on each subject for a day. And then by noon, we're pulling on our walking boots. We've got a fantastic geologist who's our local guide. And off we go to the mountains. He drives us to gorges or high peaks or these beautiful hanging meadows that lead up to passes. So then for the next 4 or 5 hours, you're out having big, exhilarating walks and looking at huge views. And you know, you might be forgetting about all your issues and having a laugh, or you might be grabbing one of the coaches and going, I'm really stuck on this bit, in which case we'll kind of intervene and try and shift things around a bit. And also we use nature as a source of ideas when you're out there. But there are a few things you can do to... basically, anything in nature is evolved to solve every problem there ever was. So if you're dealing with how to get around an obstacle and you just look down at a river and the way the water flows around a rock, that might start to give you some ideas or analogies. Or if you look at the structure of the way that a leaf pod is formed, anything that catches your eye, you can pick it up and have a good look at the principles of how it's made and its fitness for its purpose, and it will give you some material that you might be able to apply or might shift your perspective and on how, things.
And how about the actual physical activity side? How does the body and the mind work together when people are exercising and being physically active or even tired? I mean, because there are people who do kind of vision quest type exercises, yeah. Where I think the idea is to go quite extreme and subject yourself to you know,
pain,
the cold
and
deprivation,
yeah.
and lack of comfort in order to strip out the unnecessary things and get and find something that's a deeper core.
Right. Big stretch is not working on that kind of austerity and hardship model at all. It's much more about rhythmic walking and big horizons affecting your mental state and allowing you, and also being connected to nature, being immersed in great big nature, allowing you to go sort of quiet inside the way you do when you're concentrating on the physical. And then we do some work around your intuition and where do you receive it in your body, what's it feel like. So we use nature and rhythmic activity to get you into an intuitive and a creative state rather than go for the whole sort of pain and suffering and finding the hard core of yourself. It's not really about that. It's more about finding true resonant thought patterns, really. So it's knowing your mind and who you are and your identity and getting new ideas rather than discovering your steely core.
Yeah. Well, can you tell me a little bit more about the science behind it all, the way the brain works?
Our brain waves move in four different states. The most common one is beta state, and that's what we're normally in. It's perfect for multitasking. The brain waves are very short and sharp, and it allows you to deal with many things at once, and it's a conscious state. But in order to maintain all that multitasking, the connection, the reticular activating system, the bit that connects your unconscious to your conscious brain is shut so that you can get on with all these millions of things. So that's a great state for being busy in, and it's a great state for being logical in, and that's where we spend most of our time. Then there's alpha state, which is a bit slower and is induced by semi-automatic and rhythmic exercise. And in that one, the reticular activating system opens slightly, but you're conscious, so it can throw up ideas. That's why when you're driving along and you couldn't remember where you put your keys or somebody's name, it suddenly pops up. That's alpha state. So that's really good for creative thinking. After that, there's delta state, which is what you get just as you're falling asleep or dozing off. And sometimes people can access this in meditation. And delta state is a deep state. In delta state, your unconscious brain is throwing up all sorts of wonderful stuff, but only for moments can you catch it. Are you conscious because you're falling asleep?
And so that's the idea of people who keep a little book by the side of their bed.
And it's why Salvador Dali used to snooze with his chin on his paintbrush, so he would fall asleep, and then as he fell asleep, he'd fall off his paintbrush and grab his brush and paint his dreams. That's how you got such bonkers paintings from the unconscious. And then after that, there is theta, which is really, really important to your regeneration and the creative state, you know, the well-being of your brain. But you can't access it. Your conscious can't access what's going on in your unconscious at all because you're asleep.
So that's what happens when you're asleep?
That's when you're asleep, and walking, cycling and the likes put you into a place of alpha state. In other words, where there is your conscious but there is action, but your subconscious can throw things up into the conscious, and that's why that's really, really useful.
And why does it happen when you're walking or cycling?
Because your conscious brain is engaged with a repetitive activity. So that's the brain state you go into. Most of your brain is dedicated to a set of activities, watching the traffic, moving your knees, keeping balance. And that occupies just enough of your brain to put you, it's not terribly challenging. It's not like parking and silencing the kids and making a mobile phone call all at once, which really requires you to be on. It's stripped down a bit, and that allows alpha state to come along. The science around intuition and instinct and all of that, it's not really science, is it? But I think anybody who has had a big, peaceful moment in nature probably knows what I mean about stepping out and being in connection with nature and things becoming clearer. And I would really bore on and talk some rubbish if I tried to give you the science on that. I mean, I've read lots about it, and there are myriad theories.
But better to do it
than to
theorise about it.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay, well, let's continue on. Let's explore. The streets are quite empty, this being a Saturday in the city. Oh, there's a fountain. Oh. Can we go in there? Should we give it a go? I mean, this really is a great part of town for just discovering new little things.
Yes, it's brilliant.
Oh, this is Bart's. No, this is Bart's. Well, we're in the courtyard of Bart's Hospital, which, I don't know, doesn't look quite so special on the inside as it did that glimpse.
I really like it because there's a few sort of giant yucca palmy things which make it exotic to me, and these little pavilions.
What do you think happens in the pavilion?
Magical. I think that people probably pick up sad people in wheelchairs and on crutches and give them, they come out to take air or have cigarettes.
And take the airs. But no, there's a sign saying no smoking.
Even outside.
But this is a hospital.
That's right, but most hospitals are full of desperate smokers in their wheelchairs at the door.
It's quite an elegant fountain.
Lichen covered nudes.
We've got some naked sort of cherubs. No, they're not. They're sort of
what got.
Have they got.
Caryatid cherubs.
They've got sort of loincloth thing, haven't they?
More's the pity. Let's go around and see if there's a proper nude.
Rosie, most people who do ride around town, I think, will be quite familiar with what you've been talking about in terms of how cycling can increase your creative thinking. But for people who haven't experienced it, what can they do while they're riding to increase the chances of reaching this alpha state?
This is less about increasing chances of alpha state. It's more about getting a flow of new ideas and original solutions to things you're stuck on. And what I would say is this, is before you get on your bike, get very, very clear on specifically what the question is, where you need new ideas. Then go out riding and don't think about the question, just park it, leave it for a while and concentrate on your ride. And instead, really pay attention to what you're seeing. So if the design of a bus really catches your eye, as you're cycling along, dwell on the principles of the design of that bus. What makes it interesting? Why does it make it work? What materials is it made of? Why are they fit for their purpose? Would you like to be in it? What does it remind you of? And in that, you're going to have a whole lot of curious answers, strange sort of gubbins about bus design and materials and God knows what. Now, you might think that's a complete waste of time, but if you then recall your question and say, how might any of those things inspire even an absurd answer to my question? So something, what if I made, you know, if I'm stuck on something, what if I made a different version of it that was made out of the same materials as that bendy bus? What would that look like? Or so you go through a phase of using the ideas of the random stimulus you've looked at to inspire bonkers ideas in answer to your question. Then you can take your bonkers ideas and refine them into things that might work. But what it will do, if you do this repeatedly, is give you new ways in and new angles that you and nobody else has taken to your question. It's worth a try.
That was A Ride with Rosie Wolford of The Big Stretch. You can find out more about The Big Stretch on the web at www.thebigstretch.com. Well, next week, we're going to be having a stunning piece of sound art called Onset by Elias Nil. It involves the streets of Amsterdam and around 500 bicycle bells. So listen in at the same time, Monday, 1:30. I'm Jack Thurston, and this was The Bike Show on Resonance 104.4 FM.